who I am, and unlike you, my wings can't be clipped.
Well, that's wonderful for you, but where exactly does that leave me? Mac blurted out, sounding more irritated than he would have liked.
Papa began stroking the little bird, brought him up close to her face, and said, "Smack dab in the center of my love," as the two cuddled nose to beak.
I'm thinking that bird probably understands that better than I do.
I know, honey. That's why we're here. Why do you think I said I'm not like you?
Well, I really have no idea. I mean, you're God, and I'm not.
She ignored the sarcasm completely. Yes, but not exactly. At least not in the way you're thinking. Mackenzie, I am what some would say holy, and wholly other than you. The problem is that many folks try to grasp some sense of who I am by taking the best version of themselves, projecting that to the nth degree, factoring in all the goodness they can perceive, which often isn't much, and then call that God. And while it may seem like a noble effort, the truth is that it falls pitifully short of who I really am. I'm not merely the best version of you that you can think of. I'm far more than that, above and beyond all that you can ask or think.
I'm sorry, but those are just words to me. They don't make much sense.
Even though you can't fully grasp me, guess what? I still want to be known.
You're talking about Jesus, right? Is this going to be a let's try to understand the Trinity sort of thing?
Sort of, but this isn't Sunday school. This is a flying lesson. Mackenzie, as you might imagine, there are some advantages to being God. By nature, I am completely unlimited, without bounds. I have always known fullness. I live in a state of perpetual satisfaction as my normal state of existence. Just one of the perks of me being me.
That made Max smile. This lady was fully enjoying herself, all by herself, and there wasn't an ounce of arrogance to spoil it.
We created you to share in that. But then Adam chose to go it on his own, as we knew he would, and everything got messed up. But instead of scrapping the whole creation, we rolled up our sleeves and entered into the middle of the mess. That's what we have done in Jesus.
Mac was hanging in there, trying his best to follow her train of thought.
When we three spoke ourselves into human existence as the Son of God, we became fully human. We also chose to embrace all the limitations that this entailed. Even though we have always been present in this created universe, we now became flesh and blood. It would be like this bird, whose nature it is to fly, choosing only to walk and remain grounded. He doesn't stop being the bird, but it does alter his experience of life significantly.
She paused to make sure Mac was still tracking. While there was a definite cramp forming in his brain, he voiced an okay, inviting her to continue.
Although by nature he is fully God, Jesus is fully human and lives as such. While never losing the innate ability to fly, he chooses moment by moment to remain grounded. That is why his name is Emmanuel, God with us, or God with you, to be more precise.
But what about all the miracles, the healings, raising people from the dead? Doesn't that prove that Jesus was God, you know, more than human?
No. It proves that Jesus is truly human.
What?
Mackenzie, I can fly, but humans can't. Jesus is fully human. Although he is also fully God, he has never drawn upon his nature as God to do anything. He has only lived out of his relationship with me, living in the very same manner that I desire to be in relationship with every human being. He is just the first to do it to the uttermost, the first to absolutely trust my life within him, the first to believe in my love and my goodness without regard for appearance or consequence.
So when he healed the blind,
He did so as a dependent, limited human being, trusting in my life and power to be at work within him and through him. Jesus, as a human being, had no power within himself to heal anyone.
That came as a shock to Mac's religious system.
Only as he rested in his relationship with me and in our communion, our co-union, could he express my heart and will into any given circumstance. So when you look at Jesus and it appears that he's flying, he really is flying. But what you are actually seeing is me, my life in him. That's how he lives and acts as a true human, how every human is designed to live out of my life. A bird's not defined by being grounded, but by his ability to fly. Remember this, humans are not defined by their limitations, but by the intentions that I have for them. Not by what they seem to be, but by everything it means to be created in my image.
Mac felt the onset of information overload, so he pulled up a chair and just sat down. This would take some time to comprehend.
So does this mean that you were limited when Jesus was on earth? I mean, did you limit yourself only to Jesus?
Not at all. Although I have only been limited in Jesus, I have never been limited in myself.
There's that whole Trinity thing, which is where I kind of get lost.
Papa laughed a long, rich belly laugh that made Mac want to join in. She set the little bird down on the table next to Mac, turned to open the oven, and gave the pie that was baking a quick little look. Satisfied that everything was fine, Papa then pulled up a chair alongside them. Mac looked at the little bird, who, amazingly, was content to just sit there with them. The absurdity of it all gave Mac a chuckle.
To begin with, that you can't grasp the wonder of my nature is rather a good thing. Who wants to worship a God who can be fully comprehended, eh? Not much mystery in that.
What difference does it make that there are three of you and you are all one God?
Did I say that right?
Right enough.
Mackenzie, it makes all the difference in the world.
She seemed to be enjoying this.
We are not three gods. We are not talking about one God with three attitudes, like a man who is a husband, father, and worker. I am one God. And I am three persons, and each of the three is fully and entirely one.
The huh Mac had been suppressing finally surfaced in all its glory.
Never mind that. What's important is this. If I was simply one God and only one person, then you would find yourself in this creation without something wonderful, without something essential even. And I would be utterly other than I am.
And we would be without... Mac didn't even know how to finish the question.
Love and relationship. All love and relationship is possible for you only because it already exists within me, within God, myself. Love is not the limitation. Love is the flying. I am love.
As if in response to her declaration, the timer dinged, and the little bird took off and flew out the window. Watching the jay in flight took on a whole new level of delight. He turned back to Papa and just stared at her in wonder. She was so beautiful and astonishing. And even though he was feeling a little lost, and even though the great sadness still attended him, he felt himself settling down somewhat into the safety of being close to her.
You do understand that unless I had an object to love, or more accurately, a someone to love, if I did not have such a relationship within myself, then I would not be capable of love at all. You would have a God who could not love, or maybe worse, you would have a God who, when he chose, could only love as a limitation of his nature. That kind of God could possibly act without love, and that would be a disaster. And that is surely not me.
With that, Papa stood up, went to the oven door, pulled out the freshly baked pie, set it on the counter, and turning around as if to present herself, said, "The God who is, the I am who I am, cannot act
apart from love.
Mac knew that what he was hearing, as hard as it was to understand, was something amazing and incredible. It was as if her words were wrapping themselves around him, embracing him, and speaking to him in ways beyond just what he could hear. Not that he actually believed any of it, if only it were true. His experience told him otherwise. "This weekend is about relationship and love. Now I know you have a lot you want to talk to me about, but right now you'd better go wash up. The other two are on their way in for supper." She began to walk away, but paused and turned back. "Mackenzie, I know that your heart is full of pain and anger and a lot of confusion. Together, you and I, we'll get around to some of that while you're here. But I also want you to know that there is more going on than you could imagine or understand, even if I told you. As much as you are able, rest in what trust you have in me, no matter how small. Okay?"
Mac had lowered his head and was looking at the floor. "She knows. Small? His little must be barely to the right of none." Nodding agreement, he looked up and noticed again the scars on her wrists. "Papa?" Mac finally said in a way that felt very awkward, but he was trying.
"Yes, honey."
Mac struggled for the words to tell her what was in his heart. "I'm so sorry that you... that Jesus had to die."
She walked around the table and gave Mac another big hug.
"I know you are, and thank you. But you need to know that we aren't sorry at all. It was worth it."
"Isn't that right, son?"
She turned to ask her question of Jesus, who had just entered the cabin.
"Absolutely."
He paused and then looked at Mac. "And I would have done it even if it were only for you. But it wasn't." Mac excused himself and found the bathroom where he washed his hands and his face and tried to collect himself.
God on the Dock. Let's pray that the human race never escapes Earth to spread its iniquity elsewhere. C.S. Lewis. Mac stood in the bathroom, looking into the mirror while wiping his face dry with a towel. He was searching for some sign of insanity in those eyes staring back at him. Was this real? Of course not. It was impossible. But then he reached out his hand and slowly touched the mirror. Maybe this was a hallucination being brought on by all his grief and despair. Maybe it was a dream, and he was asleep somewhere, maybe in the shack, freezing to death. Maybe suddenly a terrible crash broke into his reverie. It came from the direction of the kitchen, and Mac froze. For a moment there was dead silence. And then, unexpectedly, he heard uproarious laughter. Curious, he exited the bathroom and poked his head through the doorway of the kitchen. Mac was shocked at the scene in front of him. It appeared that Jesus had dropped a large bowl of some sort of batter or sauce on the floor, and it was everywhere. It must have landed close to Papa, because the lower portion of her skirt and bare feet were covered in the gooey mess. All three were laughing so hard that Mac didn't think they were breathing. Sara Yu said something about humans being clumsy, and all three started roaring again. Finally, Jesus brushed past Mac and returned a minute later with a large basin of water and towels. Sara Yu had already started wiping the goop from the floor and cupboards, but Jesus went straight to Papa and, kneeling at her feet, began to wipe off the front of her clothes. He worked down to her feet and gently lifted one foot at a time, which he directed into the basin where he cleaned and massaged it.
"Oh, that feels so good."
She continued her tasks at the counter.
As he leaned against the doorway watching, Mac's mind was full of thoughts. So this was God in relationship? It was beautiful and so appealing. He knew that it didn't matter whose fault it was. The mess from some bowl had been broken, that a dish had been planned would not be shared. Obviously, what was truly important here was the love they had for one another and the fullness it brought them. He shook his head. How different this was from the way he treated the ones he loved. Supper was simple, but a feast nonetheless. Roast bird of some kind and an orangey, mangoey kind of sauce. Fresh vegetables spiced with who but God knew what, all fruity and gingery, tangy and peppery. Rice, the quality of which Mac had never before tasted, could have been a meal by itself. The only awkward part was at the very beginning, when Mac, out of habit, bowed his head before he remembered where he was. He looked up to find the three of them all grinning at him. Thank you, all. Could I have a bit of that rice there? Sure, we were going to have this incredible Japanese sauce, but Greasy Fingers over there, Papa nodded toward Jesus, decided to see if it would bounce. Come on now, my hands were slippery, what can I say? Papa winked at Mac as she passed him the rice. You just can't get good help around here. Everyone laughed. Conversation seemed almost normal. Mac was asked about each of the children, except Missy, and he talked about their various struggles and triumphs. When he spoke of his concerns for Kate, the three only nodded with concerned expressions, but offered him no counsel or wisdom. He also answered questions about his friends, and Sarayu seemed most interested in asking about Nan. Finally, Mac blurted out something that had been bothering him throughout the discussion. Now, here I am telling you about my kids and my friends and about Nan, but you already know everything that I'm telling you, don't you? You're acting like it's the first time you heard it. Sarayu reached across the table and took his hand. Mackenzie, remember our conversation earlier about limitation? Our conversation? He glanced over at Papa, who was nodding knowingly. You can't share with one and not share with us all. Remember that choosing to stay on the ground is a choice to facilitate a relationship, to honor it. Mackenzie, you do this yourself. You don't play a game or color a picture with a child to show your superiority. Rather, you choose to limit yourself so as to facilitate and honor that relationship. You will even lose a competition to accomplish love. It is not about winning and losing, but about love and respect. So, when I'm telling you about my children, we have limited ourselves out of respect for you. We are not bringing to mind, as it were, our knowledge of your children. As we are listening to you, it is as if this is the first time we have known about them, and we take great delight in seeing them through your eyes. I like that. Max sat back in his chair. Sarayu squeezed his hand and seemed to sit back. I do too. Relationships are never about power, and one way to avoid the will to power is to choose to limit oneself, to serve. Humans often do this in touching the infirm and sick, in serving the ones whose minds have left to wander, in relating to the poor, in loving the very old and the very young, or even in caring for the other who has assumed a position of power over them. Well spoken, Sarayu. I'll take care of the dishes later, but first I would like to have a time of devotion. Mac had to suppress a snicker at the thought of God having devotions. Images of family devotions from his childhood came spilling into his mind, not exactly good memories. Often it was a tedious and boring exercise in coming up with the right answers, or rather, the same old answers to the same old Bible story questions, and then trying to stay awake during his father's excruciatingly long prayers. And when his father had been drinking, family devotions devolved into a terrifying minefield, where any wrong answer or inadvertent glance could trigger an explosion. He half expected Jesus to pull out a huge old King James Bible. Instead, Jesus reached across the table and took Papa's hands in his, scars now clearly visible on his wrists. Mac sat transfixed as he watched Jesus kiss his father's hands and then look deep into his father's eyes and finally say, Papa, I loved watching you today as you made yourself fully available to take Mac's pain into yourself and then give him space to choose his own timing. You honored him, and you honored me.
To listen to you whisper love and calm into his heart was truly incredible. What a joy to watch. I love being your son.
Although Mac felt like he was intruding, no one else seemed concerned, and he really had no idea where he would have gone in any case. To be in the presence of such love expressed seemed to dislodge an inner emotional logjam, and while he didn't understand exactly what he felt, it was good. What was he witnessing? Something simple, warm, intimate, genuine? This was holy. Holiness had always been a cold and sterile concept to Mac, but this was neither. Concerned that any movement on his part might shatter the moment, he simply closed his eyes and folded his hands in front of him. Listening intently with his eyes shut, he heard Jesus move his chair. There was a pause before he spoke again.
"Sarah, you wash, I'll dry."
Mac's eyes snapped open in time to see the two smiling broadly at each other, picking up the dishes and disappearing into the kitchen. He sat for a few minutes, unsure about what to do. Papa had gone somewhere, and now that the other two were busy with dishes, well, it was an easy decision. He picked up silverware and glasses, and he headed for the kitchen. As soon as he had put them down for Sarayu to wash, Jesus tossed him a dish towel, and they both began drying. Sarayu began humming the same evocative tune he'd heard earlier with Papa, and Jesus and Mac simply listened as they worked. More than once, the melody stirred Mac deep inside, knocking again at the door. To him, it sounded Gaelic, and he could almost hear breath pipes in accompaniment. But as difficult as it was for Mac to stay and allow his emotions to well up so powerfully, the melody absolutely captured him. If he could just keep listening to her, he would be thrilled to do dishes the rest of his life. 10 minutes or so later, they were finished. Jesus kissed Sarayu on the cheek, and she disappeared around the corner. He then turned and smiled at Mac.
"Let's go out on the dock and look at the stars."
"What about the others?"
"I'm here. I'm always here."
Mac nodded. This presence of God thing, although hard to grasp, seemed to be steadily penetrating past his mind and into his heart. He let it go at that.
"Come on, I know you enjoy looking at stars. Want to?"
"Yeah, I think so."
Mac realized that the last time he had done this was on the ill-fated camping trip with the kids. Maybe it was time to take a few risks. He followed Jesus out the back door. In the waning moments of twilight, Mac could make out the rocky shore of the lake. Not overgrown, as he remembered, but beautifully kept and picture-perfect. The nearby creek seemed to be humming some sort of musical tune. Protruding about 50 feet into the lake was a dock, and Mac could barely make out 3 canoes tied at intervals along its course. Night was falling quickly, and the distant darkness was already thick with the sounds of crickets and bullfrogs. Jesus took his arm and led him up the path while his eyes adjusted. But already Mac was looking up into a moonless night at the wonder of the emerging stars. They made their way 3/4 up the dock and lay down on their backs, looking up. The elevation of this place seemed to magnify the heavens, and Mac reveled in seeing stars in such numbers and clarity. Jesus suggested that they close their eyes for a few minutes, allowing the last effects of dusk to disappear for the night. Mac complied. And when he finally opened his eyes, the sight was so powerful that he experienced vertigo for a few seconds. It almost felt like he was falling up into space, the stars racing toward him as if to embrace him. He lifted his hands, imagining that he could reach out and pluck diamonds one by one off of a velvet black sky.
Wow! Incredible. I never get tired of this.
Even though you created it?
I created it as the Word, before the Word became flesh. So even though I created this, I see it now as a human. And I must say, it is impressive.
It certainly is. Mac was not sure how to describe what he felt, but as they continued to lie in silence, gazing into the celestial display, watching and listening, He knew in his heart that this too was holy. As they both watched in awe-struck wonder, shooting stars would occasionally blaze a brief trail across the night blackness.
Did you see that? Awesome.
After a particularly long silence, Max spoke.
I feel more comfortable around you. You seem so different than the other two.
How do you mean, different?
Well, more real or tangible, I don't know.
He struggled with the words, and Jesus lay quiet, waiting.
It's like I've always known you. But Papa isn't at all what I expected from God, and Sarah, you, she's way out there.
Since I am human, we have much in common to begin with.
But I still don't understand.
I am the best way any human can relate to Papa or Sarah Yu. To see me is to see them. The love you sense from me is no different from how they love you. And believe me, Papa and Sarah Yu are just as real as I am, though, as you've seen, in far different ways.
Speaking of Sarah Yu, is she the Holy Spirit?
Yes. She is creativity. She is action. She is the breathing of life. She is much more. She is my spirit. And her name, Sarah Yu. That is a simple name from one of our human languages. It means wind. A common wind, actually. She loves that name.
Nothing too common about her.
True that.
And the name Papa mentioned, Elusia.
That is a wonderful name. El is my name as Creator God, but Usia is being, or that which is truly real. So the name means the Creator God who is truly real and the ground of all being. Now, that is also a beautiful name.
There was silence for a minute while Mac pondered what Jesus had said. So then, where does that leave us?
He felt like he was asking the question for the entire human race.
Right where you were always intended to be, in the very center of our love and our purpose.
Again a pause. Then,
I suppose I can live with that.
I am glad to hear that.
Mac laughed along with him. Neither spoke for a time. Stillness had fallen like a blanket, and all Mac was really aware of was the sound of water lapping up against the dock. It was he who eventually broke the silence again.
Jesus?
Yes, Mackenzie.
I am surprised by one thing about you.
Really? What?
I guess I expected you to be more... Be careful here, Mac. Humanly striking?
Humanly striking. You mean handsome?
Well, I was trying to avoid that, but yes. Somehow I thought you'd be the ideal man. You know, athletic and overwhelmingly good-looking.
It's my nose, isn't it?
Mac didn't know what to say.
I am Jewish, you know. My grandfather on my mother's side had a big nose. In fact, most of the men on my mom's side had big noses.
I just thought you'd be better looking.
By whose standards?
Anyway, once you really get to know me, it won't matter to you.
The words, though delivered kindly, stung.
Stung what, exactly?
Mac lay there a few seconds and realized that as much as he thought he knew Jesus, perhaps he didn't.
Not really.
Maybe what he knew was an icon, an ideal, an image through which he tried to grasp a sense of spirituality, but not a real person.
Why is that? You said, if I really knew you, it wouldn't matter what you looked like?
It is quite simple, really. Being always transcends appearance, that which only seems to be. Once you begin to know the being behind the very pretty or very ugly face, as determined by your bias. The surface appearances fade away until they simply no longer matter.
That is why
Elusia is such a wonderful name. God, who is the ground of all being, dwells in, around, and through all things, ultimately emerging as the real. And any appearances that mask that reality will fall away. Silence followed as Mac wrestled with what Jesus had said. He gave up after only a minute or two and decided to ask the riskier question.
You said, I don't really know you. It would be a lot easier if we could always talk like this.
Admittedly, Mac, this is special. You were really stuck, and we wanted to help you crawl out of your pain. But don't think that just because I'm not visible, our relationship has to be less real. It will be different, but perhaps even more real.
How is that?
My purpose from the beginning was to live in you, and you in me.
Wait a minute. How can that happen? If you're still fully human, how can you be inside me?
Astounding, isn't it? It's Papa's miracle. It is the power of Sarayu, my spirit, the spirit of God, who restores the union that was lost so long ago. Me? I choose to live moment by moment fully human. I am fully God, but I am human to the core. Like I said, it's Papa's miracle. Mac was lying in the darkness, listening intently.
Aren't you talking about a real indwelling, not just some positional theological thing?
Of course. It's what everything is all about. The human, formed out of the physical, material creation, can once more be fully indwelt by spiritual life, my life. It requires that a very real, dynamic, and active union exists.
That is almost unbelievable. I had no idea. I need to think more about this. But I might have a lot more questions.
And we have your lifetime to sort through them. But enough of that for now. Let's get lost again in the starry night. In the silence that followed, Mac simply lay still, allowing the immensity of space and scattered light to dwarf him, letting his perceptions be captured by starlight, and the thought that everything was about him, about the human race, that all this was all for us. After what seemed like a long time, it was Jesus who broke into the quiet. I'll never get tired of looking at this. The wonder of it all. The wastefulness of creation, as one of our brothers has called it. So elegant, so full of longing and beauty even now. Mac was suddenly struck anew by the absurdity of his situation, where he was, the person next to him.
You know, sometimes you sound so... I mean, well, here I am lying next to God Almighty, and you really sound so...
human, but ugly. And with that, he began to giggle, quietly and restrained at first, but after a couple of snorts, laughter simply started tumbling out. It was infectious, and Mac found himself swept along from somewhere deep inside him. He had not laughed from down there in a long time. Jesus reached over and hugged him, shaking from his own spasms of mirth, and Mac felt more clean and alive and well than he had since, well, he couldn't remember since when. Eventually, they both calmed again, and the night's quiet asserted itself once more. It seemed that even the frogs had called it quits. Mac lay there realizing that he was now feeling guilty about enjoying himself, about laughing, and even in the darkness he could feel the great sadness roll in and over him.
Jesus, I feel so lost.
A hand reached out and squeezed his and didn't let go. I know, Mac, but it's not true. I am with you, and I'm not lost. I'm sorry it feels that way, but hear me clearly. You are not lost.
I hope you're right.
Mac's tension lessened by the words of his newfound friend.
Come on.
Jesus stood up and reached down for Mac. You have a big day ahead of you. Let's get you to bed. He put his arm around Mac's shoulder, and together they walked back toward the cabin. Mac was suddenly exhausted. Today had been one long day. Maybe he would wake up at home in his own bed after a night of vivid dreaming. But somewhere inside, he hoped he was wrong. A Breakfast of Champions. Lord of the star fields, ancient of days, universe maker, here's a song in your praise. Voice of the nova, smile of the dew, all of our yearning only comes home to you. O love that fires the sun, keep me burning. Bruce Coburn. When he reached his room, Mac discovered that his clothes, which he had left back in the car, were either folded on top of the dresser or hung in the open closet. To his amusement, he also found a Gideon's Bible in the nightstand. He opened the window wide to let the outside night flow freely in, something that Nan never tolerated at home because of her fear of spiders and anything else crawly and creepy. Snuggling like a small child deep inside the heavy down comforter, he had only made it through a couple verses before the Bible somehow left his hand. The light somehow turned off. Someone kissed him on the cheek, and he was lifting gently off the ground in a flying dream. Those who have never flown this way might think those who believe they do rather daft, but secretly they are probably at least a little envious. He hadn't had a flying dream in years, not since the great sadness had descended. But tonight, Mac flew high into the starlit night, the air clear and cool, but not uncomfortable. He soared above lakes and rivers, crossing an ocean coast and a number of reef-rimmed islets. As odd as it sounds, Mac had learned inside his dreams to fly like this, to lift off the ground supported by nothing, no wings, no aircraft of any sort, just himself. Beginning flights were usually limited to a few inches, due mostly to fear, or more accurately, a dread of falling. Stretching his flights to a foot or two, and eventually higher, increased his confidence, as did his discovery that crashing wasn't painful at all, but only a slow-motion bounce. In time, he learned to ascend into the clouds, cover vast distances, and land gently. As he soared at will over rugged mountains and crystal-white seashores, reveling in the mist wonder of dream flight, suddenly something grabbed him by the ankle and tore him out of the sky. In a matter of seconds, he was dragged from the heights and violently thrown face first onto a muddy and deeply rutted road. Thunder shook the ground, and rain instantly drenched him to the bone. And there it came again, lightning illuminating the face of his daughter as she soundlessly screamed, "Daddy!" and then turned to run into the darkness, her red dress visible only for a few brief flashes and then gone. He fought with all his strength to extricate himself from the mud and the water, only succeeding in being sucked deeper into its grasp, and just as he was being taken under, he woke with a gasp. With his heart racing and his imagination anchored in the nightmare's images, it took a few moments for Mac to realize it had only been a dream. But even as it faded from his consciousness, the emotions didn't go with it. The dream had provoked the great sadness. And before he could even get out of bed, he was once again fighting his way through the despair that had devoured too many of his days. With a grimace, he looked around the room in the dull gray of the growing dawn that snuck in around the window shades. This wasn't his bedroom. Nothing looked or felt familiar. Where was he? Think, Mac, think! Then he remembered. He was still at the shack with those three interesting characters, all of whom thought they were God. This can't really be happening. Mac pulled his feet out of the bed and sat on its edge with his head in his hands. He thought back to the previous day and again entertained the fear that he was going crazy. As he had never been much of a touchy-feely person, Papa, whoever she was, made him nervous, and he had no idea what to make of Sara Yu. He admitted to himself that he liked Jesus a lot, but he seemed the least godlike of the three. He let out a deep, heavy sigh. And if God was really here, why hadn't he taken his nightmares away? Sitting in a quandary, he decided, wasn't helping, so he found his way to the bathroom where, to his amusement, everything he needed for a shower had been carefully laid out for him. He took his time in the warmth of the water, took his time shaving, and back in the bedroom took his time dressing. The penetrating and alluring aroma of coffee drew his eye to the steaming cup waiting for him on the end table by the door. Taking a sip, he opened the shades and stood looking out through his bedroom window onto the lake, which he'd only glimpsed as a shadow the night before. It was perfect, smooth as glass, except for the occasional trout leaping after its breakfast, sending circles of miniature waves radiating across the deep blue surface until they were slowly absorbed back into the larger surface. He estimated the far side was about a half mile away. Dew sparkled everywhere, diamond-like tears of the early morning reflecting the sun's love. The three canoes, resting easily at intervals along the dock, looked inviting, but Mac shrugged off the thought. Canoes were no longer a joy. Too many bad memories. The dock reminded him of the night before. Had he really lain out there with the one who made the universe? Mac shook his head, dumbfounded. What was going on here? Who were they, really, and what did they want from him? Whatever it was, he was sure he didn't have it to give. The smell of eggs and bacon mixed with something else curled into his room, interrupting his thoughts. Mac decided it was time to emerge and speak for his share. As he entered the main living area, he heard the sound of a familiar Bruce Coburn tune drifting from the kitchen, and a high-pitched black woman singing along rather well. "Oh, love that fires the sun, keep me burning." Papa emerged with plates in each hand full of pancakes and fried potatoes and greens of some sort. She was dressed in a long, flowing, African-looking garment, complete with a vibrant, multicolored headband. She looked radiant, almost glowing. "You know, I love that child's songs. I'm especially fond of Bruce, you know." She looked over at Mac, who was just sitting down at the table. Mac nodded, his appetite increasing by the second. "Yep. And I know you like him, too." Mac smiled. It was true. Coburn had been a family favorite for years, first his, then his and Nan's, and then each of the children, to one degree or another. "So, honey, how were your dreams last night?" "Dreams are sometimes important, you know. They can be a way of opening up the window and letting the bad air out." Mac knew this was an invitation to unlock the door into his terrors, but at the moment he wasn't ready to invite her into that hole with him. "I slept fine, thank you. Is he your favorite? Bruce, I mean?" She stopped and looked at him. "Mackenzie, I have no favorites. I am just especially fond of him." "You seem to be especially fond of a lot of people," Mac observed with a suspicious look. "Are there any who you are not especially fond of?" She lifted her head and rolled her eyes as if she were mentally going through the catalog of every being ever created. "Nope. I haven't been able to find any. Guess that's just the way I is." Mac was interested. "Do you ever get mad at any of them?" "Sure enough, what parent doesn't? There is a lot to be mad about in the mess my kids have made and in the mess they're in. I don't like a lot of choices they make, but that anger, especially for me, is an expression of love all the same. I love the ones I'm angry with just as much as those I'm not." "But what about your wrath? It seems to me that if you're going to pretend to be God Almighty, you need to be a lot angrier."
"Do I now?"
"That's what I'd think. Weren't you always running around killing people in the Bible? You just don't seem to fit the bill." "I understand how disorienting all this must be for you, Mac, but the only one pretending here is you. I am what I am.
I'm not trying to fit anyone's bill.
But you're asking me to believe that you're God, and I just don't see...
Mac had no idea how to finish his sentence, so he just gave up.
I'm not asking you to believe anything. But I will tell you that you're going to find this day a lot easier if you simply accept what is, instead of trying to fit it into your preconceived notions.
But if you are God, aren't you the one spilling out great bowls of wrath and throwing people into a burning lake of fire?
Mac could feel his deep anger emerging again, pushing out the questions in front of it, and he was a little chagrined at his own lack of self-control. But he asked anyway.
Honestly, don't you enjoy punishing those who disappoint you?
At that, Papa stopped her preparations and turned toward Mac. He could see a deep sadness in her eyes.
I am not who you think I am, Mackenzie.
I don't need to punish people for sin. Sin is its own punishment, devouring you from the inside.
It's not my purpose to punish it. It's my joy to cure it.
I don't understand.
You're right. You don't.
She said it with a smile, still sad around its edges.
But then again, we're not done yet.
Just then Jesus and Sarayu entered laughing through the back door, involved in their own conversation. Jesus came in dressed much like the day before, just jeans and a light blue button-down shirt that made his dark brown eyes stand out. Sarayu, on the other hand, was clothed in something so fine and lacy that it fairly flowed at the slightest breeze or spoken word. Rainbow patterns shimmered and reshaped with her every gesture. Mac wondered if she ever completely stopped moving. He rather doubted it.
Papa leaned down to eye level with Mac.
You raise some important questions, and we'll get around to them, I promise. But now, let's enjoy breakfast together.
Mac nodded, again a little embarrassed as he turned his attention to the food. He was hungry anyway, and there was plenty to eat.
Thank you for breakfast.
What? You aren't even going to bow your head and close your eyes?
She began walking toward the kitchen.
What is the world coming to?
You're welcome, honey.
She returned a moment later with still another bowl of steaming something that smelled wonderful and inviting. They passed the food to one another, and Mac was spellbound, watching and listening, as Papa joined in the conversation Jesus and Sarayu were having. It had something to do with reconciling an estranged family. But it wasn't what they were talking about that captured Mac. It was how they related. He never had seen three people share with such simplicity and beauty. Each seemed more aware of the others than of themselves.
So, what do you think, Mac?
Mac's mouth was half full of the very tasty greens.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I love the way that you do it.
Papa had returned from the kitchen with yet another dish.
Whoa, take it easy on those greens, young man. Those things can give you the trots if you ain't careful.
All right, I'll try to remember. He reached for the dish in her hand.
I love the way you treat each other. It's certainly not how I expected God to be.
How do you mean?
Well, I know that you are one and all, and that there are three of you, but you respond with such graciousness to each other. Isn't one of you more the boss than the other two?
The three looked at one another as if they had never thought of such a question.
I mean, I've always thought of God the Father as sort of being the boss, and Jesus as the one following orders, you know, being obedient. I'm not sure how the Holy Spirit fits in exactly.
Mac tried not to look at Sarayu as he stumbled for words.
Whatever, the Spirit always seemed kind of a free spirit?
Exactly, a free spirit, but still under the direction of the Father.
Does that make sense?
Jesus looked over at Papa, obviously trying with some difficulty to maintain the perception of a very serious exterior.
Does that make sense to you, Abba?
Frankly, I haven't a clue what this man is talking about.
Papa scrunched her face up as if exerting great concentration.
No, I've been trying to make head or tail out of it, but sorry, he's got me lost.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about who's in charge. Don't you have a chain of command?
Chain of command? That sounds ghastly.
At least binding.
They both started laughing, and then Papa turned to Mac and sang,
"Though chains be of gold, they are chains all the same."
Now don't concern yourself with those two. They're just playing with you. This is actually a subject of interest among us.
Mac nodded, relieved and a little chagrined that he had again allowed himself to lose his composure.
Mackenzie, we have no concept of final authority among us, only unity. We are in a circle of relationship, not a chain of command or great chain of being, as your ancestors termed it. What you're seeing here is relationship without any overlay of power. We don't need power over the other, because we are always looking out for the best. Hierarchy would make no sense among us. Actually, this is your problem, not ours.
Really? Well, how so?
Humans are so lost and damaged that to you it is almost incomprehensible that people could work or live together without someone being in charge. But every human institution that I can think of, from political to business, even down to marriage, is governed by this kind of thinking. It is the web of our social fabric.
Such a waste.
Papa picked up the empty dish and headed for the kitchen.
It's one reason why experiencing true relationship is so difficult for you. Once you have a hierarchy, you need rules to protect and administer it. And then you need law and the enforcement of the rules, and you end up with some kind of chain of command or a system of order that destroys relationship rather than promotes it. You rarely see or experience relationship apart from power. Hierarchy imposes laws and rules, and you end up missing the wonder of relationship that we intended for you.
Well, we sure seem to have adapted pretty well to it.
Don't confuse adaptation for intention or seduction for reality.
So then, could you please pass me a bit more of those greens? So then, we've been seduced into this preoccupation with authority?
Papa passed Mac the platter of greens, but not letting go until he pulled twice.
In a sense, yes. I'm just looking out for you, son.
When you chose independence over relationship, you became a danger to each other. Others became objects to be manipulated or managed for your own happiness.
Authority, as you usually think of it, is merely the excuse the strong use to make others conform to what they want.
Isn't it helpful in keeping people from fighting endlessly or getting hurt?
Sometimes. But in a selfish world, it is also used to inflict great harm.
But don't you use it to restrain evil?
We carefully respect your choices, so we work within your systems even while we seek to free you from them. Creation has been taken down a very different path than we desired. In your world, the value of the individual is constantly weighed against the survival of the system, whether political, economic, social, or religious, any system, actually. First, one person, and then a few, and finally, even many, are easily sacrificed for the good and ongoing existence of that system. In one form or another, this lies behind every struggle for power, every prejudice, every war, and every abuse of relationship. The will to power and independence has become so ubiquitous that it is now considered normal.
It's not? Papa returned with more food.
It is the human paradigm. It is like water to fish, so prevalent that it goes unseen and unquestioned. It is the matrix, a diabolical scheme in which you are hopelessly trapped, even while completely unaware of its existence.
As the crowning glory of creation, you were made in our image, unencumbered by structure and free to simply be in relationship with me and one another. If you had truly learned to regard each other's concerns as significant as your own, there would be no need for hierarchy.
Mac sat back in his chair, staggered by the implications of what he was hearing.
So are you telling me that whenever we humans protect ourselves with power,
you are yielding to the Matrix, not to us?
And now we have come full circle back to one of my initial statements. You humans are so lost and damaged that to you it is almost incomprehensible that relationship could exist apart from hierarchy. So you think that God must relate inside a hierarchy like you do, but we do not.
But how could we ever change that? People will just use us. They most likely will. But we're not asking you to do it with others, Mac. We're asking you to do it with us. That's the only place it can begin. We won't use you.
Mac? Papa's intensity caused him to listen very carefully. We want to share with you the love and joy and freedom and light that we already know within ourselves. We created you, the human, to be in face-to-face relationship with us, to join our circle of love. As difficult as it will be for you to understand, everything that has taken place is occurring exactly according to this purpose, without violating choice or will. How can you say that with all the pain in this world, all the wars and disasters that destroy thousands?
And what is the value in a little girl being murdered by some twisted deviant? There it was again, the question that lay burning a hole in his soul.
You may not cause those things, but you certainly don't stop them.
Papa answered tenderly, seemingly not offended in the least by his accusation. Mackenzie, there are millions of reasons to allow pain and hurt and suffering rather than to eradicate them. But most of those reasons can only be understood within each person's story. I am not evil. You are the ones who embrace fear and pain and power and right so readily in your relationships. But your choices are also not stronger than my purposes. And I will use every choice you make for the ultimate good and the most loving outcome.
You see, broken humans center their lives around things that seem good to them, but that will neither fill them nor free them. They are addicted to power or the illusion of security that power offers. When a disaster happens, those same people will turn against the false powers they trusted. In their disappointment, they either become softened toward me, or they become bolder in their independence. If you could only see how all of this ends and what we will achieve without the violation of one human will, then you would understand. One day, you will. But the cost. Look at the cost. All the pain, all the suffering, everything that is so terrible and evil. He looked down at the table. And look what it has cost you. Is it worth it?
Yes, came the unanimous, joyful response of all three.
But how can you say that? It all sounds like the end justifies the means, that to get what you want, you will go to any length, even if it costs the lives of billions of people.
Mackenzie, you really don't understand yet. You try to make sense of the world in which you live based on a very small and incomplete picture of reality. It is like looking at a parade through the tiny knothole of hurt, pain, self-centeredness, and power, and believing you are on your own and insignificant. All of these contain powerful lies. You see pain and death as ultimate evils, and God is the ultimate betrayer, or perhaps, at best, is fundamentally untrustworthy. You dictate the terms and judge my actions and find me guilty. The real underlying flaw in your life, Mackenzie, is that you don't think that I am good. If you knew I was good, and that everything, the means, the ends, and all the processes of individual lives is all covered by my goodness, then while you might not always understand what I am doing, you would trust me. But you don't.
I don't. It was not really a question.
It was a statement of fact, and he knew it. The others seemed to know it, too, and the table remained silent.
Mackenzie, you cannot produce trust, just like you cannot do humility. It either is or is not. Trust is the fruit of a relationship in which you know you are loved. Because you do not know that I love you, you cannot trust me.
Again there was silence.
And finally Mac looked up at Papa and spoke.
I don't know how to change that.
You can't. Not alone. But together, we will watch that change take place. For now, I just want you to be with me and discover that our relationship is not about performance or you having to please me. I'm not a bully, not some self-centered, demanding little deity insisting on my own way. I am good, and I desire only what is best for you. You cannot find that through guilt or condemnation or coercion, only through a relationship of love. And I do love you.
Sarayu stood up from the table and looked directly at Mac.
Mackenzie, if you care to, I would like you to come and help me in the garden. There are things I need to do there before tomorrow's celebration. We can continue relevant elements of this conversation there, please.
Sure. Mac excused himself from the table. One last comment. I just can't imagine any final outcome that would justify all this. Papa rose out of her chair and walked around the table to give him a big squeeze.
Mackenzie, we're not justifying it. We are redeeming it.
A long time ago,